Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
This is the John Fugelsang Podcast.
This is SiriusXM Progress. I'm John Fugelsang. Welcome to it. 866-997-4748. That is how you join the Love Fest. That is Tell Me Everything. A lot of ground to cover. Michael Cohen will be on our show this Friday. William Shatner will be returning to the show as well, and lots more surprises we're waiting to be able to announce. If you didn't get to see me on tour with Stephanie Miller and Hal Sparks in D.C. or the show last weekend in Chicago, the big one will be in Los Angeles, in Beverly Hills at the Saban Theater, the one over there on Wilshire and La Cienega. It's a great space. It's going to be a huge show. We'll all be doing sets. We'll be joined by special guests, including Congressman Adam Schiff, who is actually very funny, Rob Reiner, and more surprises to be announced. Man, we have a lot to get to tonight. Again, you know the number. If you're one of our day walkers who listen as a podcast on the John Fugelsang Podcast, or you listen, I don't know, on demand or on the app, hello, we'd love to hear from you guys. You're always welcome to write to our Facebook page. We'll read your comments out loud. And if you're listening live, go ahead and join the conversation. Anytime, all night long, we're going to cover a lot of ground. Thea is still away. We are very fortunate and grateful to have Claudia Forrester Torres joining us. So when you call, please, gentlemen, be gentlemen, ladies, class up just for the call and treat Claudia with the respect she deserves. It's really bad enough she has to work virtually with both me and Chris. Y'all don't need to make it worse for her evening. Thank you. Okay, let's get to it, shall we? Before we even begin, and I want to talk about the Biden gaffe today, you know, I mean, there's so much to cover. I was going to do a review about how so far Italian fascism is my least favorite reboot of the fall season. But then there's this Biden gaffe and Chris was like, should we talk about it? Should we talk about it? A lot of people aren't talking about it. And I'm like, really? Oh, then let's open with it. But before we get to that, right now, more than 1.6 million people are without power across Florida. More than 10% of all oil production in the Gulf has been shut down. You've seen the footage. Incredible storm surges around Fort Myers and Key West. Tampa Bay has actually been bypassed by a lot of the damage. Hurricane Ian has gusts of wind that have already reached 150 miles per hour, about 50% faster than the fastest Major League Baseball can be. It isn't quite a Category 5, but they have seen a 6-foot storm surge this evening. And again, hurricanes with the fastest winds usually aren't the deadliest or the most costly. It's about how the storm hits and how prepared people are and how great the infrastructure for rescue is. And of course, how the rebuilding efforts will go. There's going to be a lot of hurt here. Densely populated coastal communities that attract a lot of tourists were flooded over today. My in-laws used to have a place in Sanibel Island. It's flooded. I mean, the footage is shocking. Maybe you've seen some of the footage. Naples and Cape Coral, just incredible flooding. More than 2,000 flights were canceled today. This is the strongest hurricane to make landfall in Florida since Michael 4 years ago. 1,600 flights have already been canceled for tomorrow. And, you know, there was one video of a house in Naples getting its roof ripped off completely by just the winds. People can feel the winds as far north as Sarasota County. Ian strengthened into this extremely dangerous Category 4. It's just right below Category 5. And the winds are now covering half of the state. Governor Ron DeSantis warned of catastrophic flooding and life-threatening storm surge and widespread power outages. It's really bad. And there are resources out there, which we'll be announcing throughout the show, but there are shelters in place where you can go if you are finding yourself without a place to go in the state of Florida. There are many, many resources. I'm sure if you have a phone, you already know, but if you go to floridadisaster.org, they have all the open shelters in every county in the entire state listed. So the three deadliest hurricanes in our country's history were all before 1930, before we had modern radar. And the fourth deadliest hurricane we ever had was Katrina. Now, Katrina was only a Category 3 when it hit Louisiana, but the city was not prepared. Hurricane Sandy, which I remember that one, killed 72 people 10 years ago. I had just moved some stuff into storage in New York City, in Hell's Kitchen, underground, and just everything was destroyed. The death toll was nothing compared to Katrina's, which killed over 1,800 people, and the Great Galveston Hurricane of 1900. The Texas hurricane is the deadliest hurricane in our history, and they believe that one killed between 8,000 and 12,000 Americans. But Sandy, because it hit New York City, was the third most expensive hurricane in U.S. history. Now, tonight, it's scary. I mean, Joe Biden announced early on he was sending a lot of funding to Florida, but you're watching the TV news anchors in their foul weather gear. They can't stay up. We're seeing so much damage. It looks like they're prepared for the worst. DeSantis, to his credit, has generally followed the playbook that previous Florida governors have followed, both Republican and Democrat. But you wouldn't know this was the biggest news in the world from following social media. Because earlier today, Joe Biden was giving remarks at the Hunger Conference. Now, it would be great if the Hunger Conference was something that could get headlines. And I guess Joe Biden found a way to give it headlines. Because he began saying, "Where's Jackie?" He asked if Jackie was around. Now, when I first saw the clip, I thought, oh, he means Jackie Speier, right? That's what he's talking about. Congresswoman Speier is probably somewhere in the building. He's looking for her. But the conventional wisdom is he was talking about Congresswoman Jackie Walorski, who was killed tragically in a car accident last month. So this became the biggest news in the world. And the White House later said the Congresswoman's death had been top of his mind at some time. So I want to talk about it because I heard a lot of progressive talk. People weren't going to talk about it. And that made me want to talk about it even more because really it comes down to a debate. And the debate is between, if you had to choose, would you choose the old guy who has gaffes or the corrupt, authoritarian, racist, misogynist, pussy-grabbing, lying, violent insurrection old guy who has gaffes? I mean, there's a lot going on in the country and the world right now, but nothing more important to the White House press corps. Not that the last president stole nuclear secrets from another country and put them in a place where other nations could easily buy access. No, not the storm. No, the most important thing was to get Karine Jean-Pierre to admit the president made a gaffe by searching the crowd for a recently deceased congresswoman.
If the late congresswoman was top of mind for the president and her family was expected to be here and that's what he was thinking about, why was he looking for her? I'm not trying to be snarky here.
No, I mean, and I'm...
Between what you were saying and what he said there.
And again, I think people can understand. I think the American people out there who, you know, watch the briefing from time to time, maybe at this moment, will understand when someone is at top of mind. And this was such an important event when we're talking about hunger, when we're talking about food insecurity, when we're talking about these champions, these congressional champions who were in the room, who have worked in a bipartisan way. We don't talk much about bipartisan actions that we see in Congress at this time. And as he was naming folks, she was on top of mind, and he understands and knew that he was going to see her family on Friday.
I think you get the general
idea.
I
don't think it's
right?
all that unusual.
We can lower that one down. You get the general idea, right? So after that, they moved on and they asked. No, they didn't move on. Seriously, this is all they wanted to talk about.
Can you explain where the mistake was made? Was the president confused? Was something written in the teleprompter that he didn't recognize? Can you just help us understand what happened?
I mean, you're jumping to a lot of conclusions. I hear you, Stephen. I'm answering the question that you're jumping to a lot of conclusions. I just answered the question. If that had been the case, I would have stated that, right? I would clearly have stated what you just laid out. What I have said is that she was on top of mind, and that he is going to see her family in just 2 days' time on Friday to honor.
Okay, so you get the idea, and after that, they put the matter to rest because you could kind of tell what was going on, and it got weird in the room and no one wanted it to be weird. So they moved on to talk. No, actually, they didn't move on. This became a thing, and it even got a little tense.
I think we all totally get why she's top of mind. You've made that case pretty effectively.
Well, thank you.
I think the confusing part is why, if she and the family is top of mind, does the president think that she's living and in the room?
I don't find that confusing. I mean, I think many people can speak to sometimes when you have someone top of mind, they are top of mind, exactly that. And it is also, if you put it into the context, it's not like it happened outside of context, right? It happened at an event. Where we were calling out the champions, congressional champions in particular, of this.
Okay, we
issue.
Get it.
This
You're not going to say
issue,
anything. We'll move on
when
now.
It comes to food insecurity, something that this administration has led from the beginning of this administration, not just across the country, but also globally. You heard him talk about food insecurity last week at the UN and the investments that we have put forward as the United States of America in helping deal with that. Look, he was at an event, you all saw, you all watched, which is why you're asking the question, right, where he was calling out, again, congressional leaders, a bipartisan leadership that we have seen on this particular issue.
Can I tell you, Chris,
and,
again, with respect to
Karine
Jean-Pierre,
going to see her family in just 2 days. And
she
was on top of mind.
She's still, doing it.
I mean, that is
I love her. She's
not
great,
an unusual scenario there.
Karine, I have John Lennon top of mind just about every day, but I'm not looking around for him anywhere.
When you sign a bill for John Lennon as president, then we can have this conversation. Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay, so anyway, you get the idea. That's it. So, I didn't understand why they just didn't say, oh, he thought Jackie Speer was there. Boom, you could have just had it go away. But Biden has not done that. He made a mistake. He made a mistake. And it's a mistake of age. Look, here's the deal. With this show, I have to make a promise that we're not going to bullshit about stuff. But we're not also going to feed a right-wing narrative at the same time. So I've had no problem saying Joe Biden's old. He's our oldest president. The guy he beat was previously the oldest president in history. Joe Biden's old. It's not necessarily a bad thing, any more than being young is necessarily a bad thing. I don't mind that he's old. Full disclosure, Joe Biden was not my first choice to be president. I'm not a registered Democrat. I've never belonged to any party. I generally vote for Democrats because the right wing forces me to. I have supported third party presidents in the past, but only because I was voting in a safe blue state. I would never vote third party in a state where a Democrat could lose. So that's kind of how I've been. Haven't been a Democrat, but I root for them. Golly, boy, howdy, do I root so hard. Biden wasn't my second choice or my third choice of that large Democratic field in 2020, but I always knew he'd be the nominee. I predicted it on this show in February of 2017. I predicted Kamala Harris would be his running mate on this show in February of 2017. And he's old. But here's the deal. Just because he's old and makes mistakes doesn't mean that he's senile and inept and not fit for office. Listen to any Biden interview, especially about a subject like climate change. My God, listen to him talk about the science. Yeah, he's old, but he's engaged and he's smart and he has more energy than a lot of the 40-year-olds I know. Listen to this. This is a recent interview with Biden over the weekend on 60 Minutes, and you can tell he's old, okay? No, we're not saying he's not old. But listen to this, talking about the big railroad strike which would have been catastrophic for our entire economy, that Biden's White House helped resolve last week.
Mr. President, you have just averted a nationwide railroad strike that would have been crippling to the economy. How did you do that? And what were those last hours like in the negotiations?
Well, look, we brought business and labor together. One of the things that happens in negotiations, particularly if they've been elongated like these have, is people say and do things where their pride gets engaged as well. And it's awful hard to back off of some of these things. So what we did was just say, look, let's take a look. Let's take a look at what's happening. You have a good deal being made for labor. Their income is going to go up 24% over the next 5 years. They've worked out the health care piece. They worked out days off. They both sat down, in my view, and they were in the office today saying, well, we finally figured out this is fair on both sides. And it took that time to focus. And the alternative was just not thinkable.
What do you mean?
If, in fact, they had gone on strike, the supply chains in this country would have come to a screeching halt. We would have seen a real economic crisis.
Right. Old. Out of it? Disassociated? Feeble? No. But I'll agree that, he's old. You're going to have gaffes. It's going to happen. There'll be more of this. But here's the deal. What I like about Joe Biden, what I like about this version of Joe Biden, more than all the Joe Bidens I've grown up watching on my TV, I like that old Joe Biden has policies that are much younger than he is. I like that over the years, this guy that I watched as a kid with the Anita Hill Clarence Thomas hearings, that he's become more sensitive over the years to women's rights and abortion rights, that he's opened his mind and his heart to LGBT rights, that he's understood trans identity, that he's looked out for marginalized people, that he was liberal enough that the first black president asked him to be his running mate. He's an old guy who didn't become more conservative. He became more open-hearted and open-minded. Donald Trump's an old guy who has not evolved one jot since the 1970s. But yeah, Biden's old. Yeah, he's going to have gaffes. He forgot a congresswoman was dead. And that's okay. I forget Chuck Grassley is still alive. He's still younger than Paul McCartney, Bernie Sanders, Ringo Starr, Bob Dylan, but he's 80. Here's the thing. Being 80 means he's still younger than the 94-year-old Herbert Hoover economics that the Republican Party is going to run for president in 2024. Because let's be honest, whether it's Trump, whether it's DeSantis, whether it's Tucker or Mike Pence or Nikki Haley, or even if it's Liz Cheney, whoever the Republican nominee is, they're going to be running on 94-year-old Herbert Hoover economics. It's going to be trickle down all the way. Someone who thinks the market will take care of everything. Someone who says that helping those who are struggling is only going to make them lazy. Someone who's going to make the rich happy because they believe they'll create so much jobs and all that prosperity will trickle down to all of you and a rising tide lift us all boats and ignore the fact it hasn't worked the last few times we've done it. The problem is most of the jobs these job creators create are in Asia. The problem is when you shop at Walmart, your money doesn't stay in your community. And the goods you're buying weren't made in your country. Herbert Hoover ran for president in 1928. In 1929, he cut taxes. He lowered the top rate from 25% to 24%. In 1930, he vetoed several bills that would have provided direct relief to struggling Americans. You know, the kind of stuff that Biden's been passing nonstop. He said, prosperity cannot be restored by raids upon the public treasury. He said in his 1930 address to Congress. So, who did he protect? He wasn't protecting working people struggling. Nah, not in the Depression. Herbert Hoover protected businesses. He signed the Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act. He entered into a tariff war, like others you can imagine. Supposed to protect farmers, ended up imposing 40% tariffs on 900 products. Really stupid, really bad for business, just like what Trump did. That year, 1930, the nation's gross domestic product fell 8.5%. The unemployment rate was almost 9%. And in the following year, other countries retaliated against the U.S. with their own tariffs. And then the trade war reduced our trade internationally by 67%. GDP growth fell 6.4%, and the unemployment rate under Hoover in 1931, 2 years after the Wall Street crash, went up to 16%. Because Hoover was all about the laissez-faire economics. He thought an economy that's all about capitalism, it'll fix itself, it self-corrects. Economic assistance will make you lazy, the usual bullshit. You know what Will Rogers said about Herbert Hoover in 1932? He said they didn't start thinking of the old common fellow till just as they started out on the election tour. The money was all appropriated for the top in the hopes that it would trickle down to the needy. Mr. Hoover was an engineer. He knew that water trickles down. Put it uphill and let it go and it will reach the driest little spot. But he didn't know that money trickled up. Give it to people at the bottom, and the people at the top will have it before night anyhow, but it will at least have passed through the poor fellow's hands. They saved the big banks, but the little ones went up the flue. Will Rogers wrote that in his weekly column in the St. Petersburg Times in 1932. Biden is old, but the policies he will be running against will be Herbert Hoover. 94-year-old economic policies. Biden's very young compared to what he's going to be running against. And it doesn't matter if it's DeSantis, doesn't matter if it's Trump. It's going to be the aristocracy over the democracy, because that's the only thing the Republican Party has run for office since Nixon left. Biden could have lied and said he was talking about Jackie Spirit. That's not Biden. Biden would rather take the hit and be a good Catholic and apologize to the family. So look, if it's a choice between the guy who's trying to rig the election and calls women pieces of ass and is still lying that he won the election, I'll take the Biden gaffes. I'll take the old guy fucking up. But I'm not going to play dumb. The Republican Party can easily weaponize this, and they will fundraise off this. The Joe Biden is senile meme is not going to go away. Biden is much sharper now than Reagan was in his second term. But in fairness, the Democrats called out Reagan's erratic statements back then. Today, they should expect the same. So if you don't like it, you run somebody else. You run somebody else in 2024. Don't worry about it. Maybe Biden's not going to run anyway. But if his age is such a problem, you get somebody else. I mean, I generally vote based on what their policies are. Whose policies will help the most people and hurt the fewest. But, you know, you want a president who's not going to make old guy gaffes? Fine. 28% of Democrats say they'd vote for Vice President Kamala Harris. Only 28% if Biden didn't run. And she's in the lead. Pete Buttigieg, 13% say they'd vote for him. And then Elizabeth Warren, Gavin Newsom, Amy Klobuchar, and Cory Booker are all in the single digits. Now, I know a lot can change in a primary field, and maybe a year from now, there'll be 10 Democrats running for the nomination against the 10 Republicans who'll be running for it. But, you know, here's the thing. It all comes down to policy. Okay. Yes, Biden's old and old guys make old guy gaffes. But as the last two Republican presidents have proven, millionaire at birth idiots make millionaire at birth idiot gaffes. Just think about leadership. Think about leadership. Because today Biden made a speech about something that I want you to imagine any Republican saying. He was talking about the incredibly dangerous nature of Hurricane Ian. In these remarks today, which no one talked about this statement. Everyone talked about where's Jackie, but no one talked about the fact that Biden gave a warning to the greedy fossil fuel executives in this country. Give a quick listen.
Danger is real. When the storm passes, the federal government's going to be there to help you recover. We'll be there to help you clean up and rebuild, to help you get Florida get moving again. And we'll be there at every step of the way. That's my absolute commitment to the people of the state of Florida. And if you forgive me, I want to add one more warning. That's warning to the oil and gas industry.
Listen to this.
Do not, let me repeat, do not use this as an excuse to raise gasoline prices or gouge the American people.
Boom.
The price of oil has stayed relatively
low. That's all we need to hear from
it
that
kept
one.
Going down.
Thank
the price
you.
Of gas.
Well, no, keep it playing, actually. Keep it playing.
Well,
okay, I want you to just imagine
me the
Donald Trump
of only about 190,000 barrels a day has been impacted by this storm thus far. That's less than 2% of the United States daily production impacted for a very short period of time. This small temporary storm impact on oil production provides no excuse for price increases at the pump. None. If gas companies
boom
try
thank you,
to
Chris.
Use this storm to
So, think about that. A warning. Let me repeat, do not use this as an excuse to raise gasoline prices and gouge the American people. Can you imagine Ron DeSantis Can you imagine Donald Trump doing this? Newt Gingrich, Mike Pence, Tucker Carlson? Can you imagine George Bush or Dick Cheney calling out oil companies for trying to profit off the suffering of working Americans? You can't. That's why Joe Biden is very young compared to the very old dead men whose policies he'll be running against. We got to take a quick break. We'll be right back with great Bob Seska. This is Progress.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
I'm John Fugelsang. This is SiriusXM Progress. We are at 866-997-4748. I am so glad to welcome to the show the great Bob Seska, one of our favorite guests. Bob, of course, is the star of the Bob Seska podcast. You might have fallen in love with his work on the Stephanie Miller Show. Maybe you're a big fan like I am from his columns in Salon. Bob joins us every Wednesday night to class the join up. And Bob, we were having a big problem with our microphones. We just got it all sorted out in time for your call. Welcome back, sir.
Thanks so much, John. And in fact, I'm hearing two of you. So I'm just, I'll let you know. I'll let the people in the booth know what I'm hearing on my end. I don't know if everyone else can hear two of you, but I'm
Chris, do you hear two of me?
So I don't know. Oh, not anymore. No. Now it's fixed. Okay. I spoke too soon. Now we're set.
I mean, I hear John in my sleep.
Bob, is this other me in the room with us right now, Bob? Can you point on the Zoom to where can you see the other me in my Zoom picture, Bob? We're your friends. We love you, and we invited you here not to do a show, but because we love you. Is this your first Zoom intervention? Is this your first?
I thought it was being punked or something. I thought there was some sort of prank happening. There you are. Hey, now I see you too.
Yes, you were being punked the first time you agreed to appear on this show. Thank you so much. Yes, now I'm back. Welcome. We just
had an amazing
technological feat here in South Harlem. It's good to see you, Mr. Seska. Thank you so much. It's on a day when all eyes are turned to Florida and the devastation of this storm. Obviously, it's kind of hard to keep focused on the politics.
Yeah, it is. My good friend and co-host on Tuesdays on my podcast, Buzz Burbank, lives in the Pinellas County area, which is Tampa and so on. And fortunately for him, it seems like the track of Ian is sort of dodging them and heading more south. I guess, what was it like? Is moving northeast now at this point? It was initially moving north, and now it's moving more toward Orlando. It devastated Fort Myers.
It did. So, and Sanibel Island is underwater, but it really, Tampa was largely unscathed.
Yeah. So that's good news for everyone in Tampa. I know my dad has a condo in Clearwater, so I'm relieved for the condition of that property, certainly. But I'm not so relieved for everyone else who has faced gigantic storm surges. I can't relate necessarily to the ocean rising up and washing away all of your things, but back in, I want to say 1999, 2000, somewhere around there, Hurricane Floyd came up the East Coast and flooded out the first house that I ever owned. I had a little duplex, and the basement flooded straight away because of that hurricane. And then, strangely enough, every property I owned subsequent to that, I owned a commercial property for my animation studio briefly. And then I also bought a house after I sold the house that flooded. And both of those properties also got flooded in the basement as well. Wow. So I have like this weird thing. And I've lived in two houses that have also burned down. So wow.
Okay.
Natural disasters of any sort, man. My empathy goes.
I'm not going to store my shit at your place, is what you're saying. I'm not going to store shit at your place when I move. Okay.
Please don't. Know, yeah.
I think most of us, especially if you've lived on the coast with the hurricanes, have a story like this. I mean, I remember when I was a kid, Hurricane Gloria. And we had no electricity on Long Island for a whole week. We were doing homework by candlelight. And then, of course, you know, 10 years ago, I had just moved my mother out of Florida when my mother went into hospice. And I had unpacked all my stuff from the attic, all my stuff in my parents' attic when we finally sold the house. And I moved all my stuff. I rented a truck, brought it up to New York, put it in a brand new storage unit in the basement in Hell's Kitchen, 10th Avenue. You wouldn't think that waves of raw sewage would make it all the way to 10th Avenue in Manhattan. And that was the week before Hurricane Sandy hit. And all my childhood stuff, everything, yearbooks, letters, photos, all destroyed by 4 feet deep of sewage.
Oh, God.
I can literally tell you, Bob, my childhood is toxic.
But I know what you mean.
But, you know,
I absolutely know what you mean.
You have to live through a hurricane to realize how awe-inspiring and terrible these storms are. And I know Joy Behar caught some heat for talking about this, or Don Lemon caught some heat for talking about it earlier today. But, you know, scientists agree, regardless of your politics, when oceans are 1 degree warmer, you will be seeing more hurricanes.
Yeah. And of course, we can lie to ourselves and deny that there is a climate crisis happening. Or as I've been referring to it, John, as human extinction is actually occurring. Climate crisis, I think that has, you know, run its course. I think a lot of people hear the word climate, they mistake it for weather, they confuse the thing, and there's all this disinformation out there regarding the climate or global warming. I think if we redefine it as human extinction, impending human extinction, I think that will have much more of an impact, and it has the benefit of being true as well. Because ultimately, as we've heard time and time again, the planet will ultimately be fine. It's human beings that will have a very, very difficult time as this gets worse and worse and worse. And so, as I was saying before, we can deny all of it and pretend that it's not happening, just like so many of us pretended COVID didn't exist. But that's not going to change a goddamn thing. Obviously, the science is correct. And this is happening. We are in the middle of it now. No, it's not creating hurricanes. It's only making the hurricanes worse. And I think that's what we can expect. And one of the things that concerns me, John, about this is as we move forward in time, as we contend with more and more of these natural disasters. I also, by the way, lived through the Santa Rosa wildfires as well, which was insane.
Yeah.
You talk about, you know, not knowing from moment to moment what was going to happen.
Yeah.
But as these things get worse and worse, wildfires, floods, I'm afraid that what we're going to do is instead of focusing on the solution to prevent the advancement of the climate crisis, to prevent the advancement of the globe getting warmer and temperatures going off, ocean temperatures rising, I'm afraid that we're going to focus on just mitigation, like creating better seawalls and hurricane-proof housing and things like that, rather than focusing on the real problem itself. And that's why I'm so relieved, and not to make this flagrantly political, but that's why I'm so relieved to have the Inflation Reduction Act and this huge cut in carbon emissions that as part of it. So hopefully that will continue the trend, and there'll be another step after that to further reduce carbon emissions, rather than focusing on, you know, what will inevitably happen as well, which is, you know, new sand berms and things like that to prevent the, you know, the symptoms of the climate crisis. But we're still faced with the actual thing itself.
Bob, I want to say we should actually point out the fact that this is, at least today, some Floridians are having a worse day than Donald Trump, because most days that's not true. And Donald Trump, like most rich people, will never be inconvenienced by a hurricane or by climate change. But Donald Trump is, I would say that in a summer of very bad weeks, he's had a very bad week. And of course, we could talk about Tish James all day, but let's just talk about a story that was driven from the headlines today. The Mar-a-Lago espionage case, because It's like they take one day off to cover a hurricane, and that's when we find out, yeah. Oh, wait, no, it wasn't 35 boxes. It wasn't 11,000 documents. It was actually 200,000 pages of material that was taken mm-hmm. from Mar-a-Lago. Oh, and by the way, the special master comes out and says that no vendors will work with Trump, and the DOJ is saying, put up or shut up if you're going to claim that the FBI planted evidence at Mar-a-Lago. Like, yeah. The one day we don't pay attention to this story, and so much more happens.
And also Donald Trump fired Chris Keiss, which mm-hmm. is another dimension to all of this, which is that, good God, can you imagine having to be a lawyer for Donald Trump? Can you imagine the micromanaging that's going on in that scenario? And that's probably why Chris Keiss left, because Chris Keiss was giving Donald Trump professional legal advice. And Donald Trump didn't want to hear any of that, because Donald Trump's all about shaving the corners off of reality and shaving the corners off of truth. And in this case, for example, where Judge Deary is insisting that the Trump team prove that documents were planted or evidence was planted by the FBI. Right. And obviously they can't do that. They're painted into a corner. Donald Trump has painted himself into a corner. Judge Deary has added another coat of paint to that paint. So that's right. The situation there. And I'm sure Chris Keiss was like, you know, we have to do what the judge is asking us here, because the burden is on us. We are the plaintiffs in this case. We have to prove our allegations against the government. And so far, they haven't really done that, which is the most bizarre thing. But obviously, the upshot here is delay, delay, delay.
That's it.
Every second that goes by. Yeah.
And this is something we were on stage at the Steph show the other night with Jackie Speier. And I was just talking about the fact that it's all about the billable hours, that Donald Trump's lawyers are playing him the way Donald Trump plays everyone around him. They are mm-hmm. bleeding him like one of his smarter wives. This guy, Chris Keiss, knows that Donald Trump doesn't pay people. So he said, I'll come work for you, but you got to pay me $3 million up front. And Trump agreed. And Trump paid him $3 million up front, which is to say, Bob, dumb motherfuckers who donate to Trump's super PAC paid Chris Keiss $3 million up front, money that could have been spent on a new private jet. And now Keiss is already off the team. Why would he be fired already unless he just wouldn't lie for Trump? Because it seems to me being a Donald Trump lawyer is the best gig in the world. You know what the outcome is going to be. Your job is to delay it and keep on charging more billable hours.
That's right. And he was probably resisting doing that. Obviously, Judge Deary is putting a lot of pressure on the Trump team. And I think Chris Keiss wanted to comply with that or else lose his law license in this ridiculous, frivolous lawsuit. So I think to that extent, he didn't want to engage in any more Trump fuckery. He was more interested in preserving his career and his reputation as a lawyer. So this is one of many times we're going to see in this process where Donald Trump is booting lawyers off of his team, hiring new lawyers, running out to the next nearest bus bench, you know, to find another lawyer phone number to call. Better call Saul at some point. Mm-hmm. And so that's I think, how this is always going to go. And as I said before, the entire point of this is to get everyone talking about, well, in this case, Chris Keiss, or getting everyone to talk about whatever crazy thing Donald Trump said yesterday about, you know, evidence right. being planted or being able to declassify things with your mind, rather than talking about the real issue here, which is that whether he declassified those documents or not, what really matters here is he thought that once he declassified them, that he could just keep them. They were right. just his to keep. These are mine now.
Yeah.
It's like staying in a hotel room. And after you use the towels, you say, well, I've used these towels, so I'm just going to keep them. They're mine now because I've touched them.
He thought the generals worked for him. He thought the White House counsel and the attorney general worked for him. Mr. Seska, we're at a hard out. Thank you so much for joining us again. We'll see you next week. Everybody subscribe to the Bob Seska Show. When we come back, I'm so excited because I don't know if you listen to the Politics Girl podcast. You should. Lee McGowan is just brilliant, and I've wanted to get her on the show for ages. We finally have her joining us, coming right up. One of the best podcasters in the game, being sucked into our liberal web of lies and deceit. This is Progress After Dark, y'all.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
And welcome back to SiriusXM Progress. If you have enjoyed our recent interviews with Julian Lennon or our town hall with Ken Burns for his amazing documentary about the U.S. and the Holocaust, if you missed them, you can always hear them on demand on the SiriusXM app or on the John Fugelsang podcast. Also, coming up, William Shatner returns to the show. We're very excited about that. And this Friday, Michael Cohen. We recorded the interview the other day, and it went really well, Chris. I really think he likes me. I know he likes me. He's actually here now. He's staying on my couch. He's actually been here for a couple of days, crashing on the couch. I don't know what to say. He's very nice. He's borrowed money 3 times, but we're happy to have him. So please tune in to hear that on Friday night. Right now, I am so thrilled to welcome. I'm geeking out over this because there are some people who are podcasters in the progressive world or liberal world or democratic world or just anti-evil. Anti-evil fundamentalist fascist motherfucker world. But Lee McGowan does one of the smartest and most passionate podcasts out there. You may know her as Politics Girl. Now, she's a native of Toronto, so you know she's cool. And our paths have crossed many, many times over the years, but I've watched her over the years. Her YouTube channel is just fantastic. And she's a daily TikTok and Instagram and Twitter ranter and one of my favorite people to follow. The podcast itself is super fun, and it makes me angry because she's so effortlessly funny, yet she can do really, really deep interviews with newsmakers. She has a great one with Karen Bass this week that'll make you want to move to LA and register to vote. What a pleasure to welcome Lee McGowan, a.k.a. Politics Girl, to our evil army of the night. Hello.
Hello, John. Thank you for joining, having me join your army. I love that.
Thank you.
As a Canadian, so nice I don't get you. Much chance to be in the army, so I will take it.
Well, if you were Russian, you'd be getting a chance right now, like Snowden.
I know.
Yeah.
So sad. Oh, they'd have me shipped out on the first train to the front line.
Listen, I'm such a fan. I really am. I'm so delighted to have you. And I want to just begin by saying how much I love that you got Karen Bass to sit down. You do so effortlessly what I pretend I can do on this show, which is you will go satirical, you will go broad, you will go goofy, even very, very funny. And then you can change to a serious policy driven discussion on a dime. I pretend to do that, but you make it look easy. Now, you do the show with your husband, right?
My husband is the producer. Yeah, he got stuck with me during the pandemic. He just happened to have the skills that I needed and the time because he was stuck in a house with me for almost 2 years. So yeah, no, he did get wheeled in. But I think now that the project has really taken off, there is definitely a part of him that's like, this is not my full-time job and I have lost my mind doing this with my wife. But we're both really passionate and it gives me a place to put it. And that's, I mean, the rants that I do in my kitchen, that came directly from me following my husband around the house, ranting at him and him being like, babe, I love you, but could you put that somewhere else? You know, well, and that's how those ones were born.
That's inspiring because Chris won't even go out with me, but you know, my producer, but I wanted to ask you about that because like we go up here at the night and my last show is in the afternoon, but we've been working here at What the Fuck O'Clock for a couple of seasons now and it's fun. But I always thought that these breakfast rants you do, I think that's what you call them, right? The breakfast rants.
That seems like
the smartest, most passionate way to start your day in a creative way to get fired up about the things that matter early in the morning. And is that what we're talking about? That just evolved from you ranting in the morning?
If you go back on my TikTok account, which now has, you know, we've done 450 videos or whatever. I mean, it's bananas how many there's been now. But If you look at the first videos, I'm in my pajamas. I literally have no makeup on. I'm drinking a coffee. It was back when you had to do TikTok at 58 seconds. So we were like, geez, this is really hard. And so the view of those old ones, that's where we found the rhythm of the breakfast rants, because my husband basically just edited out me breathing. We just didn't have the time for breath. So he just edited it out and it became a vibe. But yeah, no, and we got to 100,000 followers and I was like, I should probably get dressed, you know, like, this is, and then, you know, we got 100,000 more followers and I was like, these people deserve a little mascara, you know? And so I've pulled it together a little bit. And then the podcast is just an extension of the rant, which was really a reflection of the original YouTube channel, which is civics, but with sass and with personality and with a way for people to engage in the political process, because I started the whole thing because people were clued out and everyone I knew was clued out. And every time I would talk about a political issue or get involved in a political issue or want to talk about something that was happening, I'd watch their eyes glaze over. And it's hard. I mean,
I know.
It's a little bit like when you're an actor, right? You're like, oh, this part I'm working on, it's, and your friends are like, you know, and you think, oh, they're not interested. And it's the same thing with politics.
It's the same
thing. Politics actually affects your life. You know, the off Broadway show you're doing about, you know, you're playing a shoe, that maybe isn't as interesting, but politics really matters to people's lives. And I realized that at the end of the day, people's lack of interest is really just a lack of knowledge. And once you know more, then you want to do more. You know, once you know, you can't help but care. You know,
I agree. But my big fear, I've always said that voter apathy is fascism's lube. And people who don't care are the reason. It's not the liberals not voting. It's the people who just don't care and are disengaged from the whole thing. And the challenge always is, how do we get our loved ones, our lovers, our friends, our Facebook friends, our coworkers to actually realize, hey, no, it's local and state elections matter a lot more than just who's president. I mean, I guess we all have six really awful fascist Supreme Court justices to thank this year. They gutted Roe v. Wade, but they have awakened, I think, a sleeping Democratic giant. I'm cautiously optimistic that all these pundits with their landline polls are going to be shocked at the voter turnout this fall.
Yeah, I actually am too. I think they're going to be shocked by the young people that come out. But I think, you know, I think the first way to connect with people and get people voting, because I think people forget that the non-voters are the biggest voting bloc in the country, right?
Always.
You know, 81 million people voted for Joe Biden, 74 million people voted for Trump, but 111 million people didn't vote. So they're still the biggest voting bloc in the entire country.
I always say in 2016, apathy came in first, Hillary second, Trump third.
But the thing is I think what we need to do is we need to approach people with the idea that this apathy they feel is by design. So people don't have to feel bad, because often when people feel bad, they check out. They're like, oh, I feel guilty and now I feel bad. I don't want to be part of it. This apathy is by design. I mean, what have we been told our whole lives not to talk about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Politics and religion. And what are the two things that cause the most problems in the history of the world? Politics and religion. So not talking about it just serves the people in charge. It just serves the people making the rules. And so they want us not talking about it. The apathy is by design. And so the more we start talking about it, the more we get our people involved, the more people understand. And I always say we're responsible for our people. You know, that means the people at your dining room table. That means having that weird, uncomfortable conversation. But that also means like the person doing your hair or the person that you meet at the coffee shop or whoever it is. I don't mean get into fights with hardcore Trump supporters. I think that's an utterly waste of your time at this point.
But
get into conversations with people that just don't know or people that just don't vote and start explaining those things to them. Because ultimately, once you know, it's like learning a new word. You know, you learn a new word and suddenly everyone's using that word. No, they're not. It just went over your head before.
That was the Stacey Abrams model when she ran against Stacey Evans the last time. Stacey Evans model, she was great, but she's like, hey, we got to talk some sense into these Trump voters. Stacey Abrams was, no, you can't do that. Let's go for everybody who didn't vote last time or has become a citizen since last time or who has turned 18 since last time. So let me ask you, if I may, about our current Republican Party, because God bless our friends over there. In the last, 10 days, they've pushed a deeply unpopular national abortion ban. For the first time in history, a former president has faced an attorney general lawsuit that could devastate him financially. A governor used taxpayer dollars for COVID to fly illegal asylum seekers from one state to another state in a stunt. And of course, a game show host who became president, but lost the popular vote twice, had another Nazi rally. On top of all of this, they are running a slate of candidates for the Senate that look like Todd Akin's 2012 All-Stars. Here's Mitch McConnell, a Tuchris. He was asked today to update his thoughts about the poor pool of candidates his party is putting on the midterm ballot. Here's Mitch.
Just as we head into the election, do you still stand by your comments about candidate quality, or has your outlook changed?
In every election, every year, this year, past years, it's great to have terrific candidates. We're in a bunch of close races. I think we have a 50-50 shot of getting the Senate back. It's going to be really, really close either way, in my view.
So notice he didn't actually refute anything. He just said it's great to have good candidates. They have J.D. Vance. They have Herschel Walker. They have Dr. Oz. Blake Masters is blowing it like I've never seen in Arizona. Should we be thankful that our fascists tend to be really inept?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. We should be thankful for that, John. I mean, listen, we should be grateful that Donald Trump is so inept. You know, if
yes,
with the amount of opportunity that man had, we should already be a fascist dictatorship. I mean, I've never in my life seen someone so clueless to make that many mistakes and surround yourself with that many yes men that cannot do their jobs. This is an astounding thing. You've got Devin Nunes leaving the, you know, to run his new Truth Social. The thing's been run into the ground. I mean, the amount of people that blew it here,
yeah,
will never get that chance again. So we have to be very, very sure that we don't let these people back into power, because they learned all their mistakes. They know where they blew it the first time, and they are not going to make that mistake again. And you can see people like Mike Pompeo and people that are smarter versions, people like DeSantis, you know, that would come in and not make those same errors, but have exactly the same plan, which is we answer to nobody, and our rules are the rules, and you will live the way we tell you to live because we think we've got it right. And I think that the midterms really are our last best chance to stave off this tip into autocracy, which is going on around the entire world. It's not just happening in America.
Sure is.
Everyone in the world is sort of going like, I just need my problem solved, and these people say they'll fix it, you know? And the problem with democracy is it's hard work. It's a lot of work. And it's not, things just don't get fixed overnight, and you can't just get it done. And, you know, and people are frustrated with that. They get tired of that. They just want it to be done. And someone like Donald Trump comes in and says, only I can fix it, and you've been forgotten, and the reason your life isn't the way it is because of these people. So let's get That's rid right. of these people, and your life will be perfect. Of course it will not. Of course.
Now imagine that. Imagine that pitch in Italian, and you'll see why we got a reboot this week.
With a prettier hair.
With much prettier hair, much more attractive than Uncle Benito, I must say. I haven't been as terrified of what's been happening in Italy, and maybe I'm naive. It seems like they don't have the same will of the people behind them that Mussolini had. This seems like fascists who, if they want to keep their job, are going to have to learn to compromise with other parties and the European Union really quickly, because if we know one thing about Italian voters, I was saying earlier in the show, they're very skeptical of anybody in office, and they will vote you what we call the fuck out 10 times in 1 year if they don't like it. So I don't know how that's going to play out. Do you have any thoughts?
I really don't. I wish I did. I mean, all I can say is it's bad. It's bad news with authoritarianism rising around the world. All I can say is they've set up their system better there. You know, there's more checks and balances. If the people don't like what's happening, they have a way to overturn it almost immediately. In a way, we don't. We have these elections every 2 years, but really the presidential elections every 4 years, and there's no way to reverse it. There's no way to reverse it if you put someone like a Kyrsten Sinema in, and she's there for 6 years, and you're like, oh, she's not even a Democrat. Like, what are we doing? There's no way to recall her. We have no recourse. It wasn't built into our system. It was built into these European systems a lot more. And if you can't get a coalition, then you can't govern, and then you're done, which, fingers crossed, that's what happens. But I think the bigger picture is authoritarianism more appealing to people? Have people just fallen out of love with democracy? It just seems too difficult. And, you know, you look at Hungary, and you look at Belarus, and you look at Brazil, and you look at Russia, and, you know, and people go, is it just more appealing? Do you just want someone to come in and tell you what you're going to do and where you're going to be and who's the good person and who's the bad person? And, you know, people love that kind of dichotomy. They love black and white, yes and no. And they love it if they're on, obviously, if they're on the side of the winning side. You know, these Christian fascists in our nation, they're the minority. They're the minority of this country. And
they
yet
are.
They feel like the big winners now because people keep saying, like, you know, you've been left behind and we're going to protect you and you're the victims and here we are for you. And I always think, oh, Lord, you know, I wonder about the Republicans. I mean, you're talking about the Republicans. The Republicans that are still planning to vote for this slate of people, the Blake Masters and the J.D. Vances and the, you know, Mastrianos, these people, because it's like, I'm not talking to the racists. I mean, there's nothing I can do about people's completely misguided belief that their skin color somehow makes them better. You know, those people cannot be reached at this moment. You know, they're holding on to their whiteness as a life raft and it's really an anchor and they can't see that. It's holding them back and they don't know. And I don't think I'm talking to the QAnons or the conspiracy theorists because they're down a rabbit hole and I could give you 1,000 facts and they would
beyond
tie
reason.
Themselves into knots.
Beyond
right?
morality, beyond reason.
Yeah. And it's like they're going to try and justify it a million different ways. I don't even think I'm talking to, you know, the people who are lost just in general, who don't vote, who don't know, who just vote the way their friends do. The people that always end up talking to the Daily Show at the rallies, you know, where you try and explain one thing to them and they're like, oh, you know,
you
and they have literally
either.
No idea. Yeah. I'm talking to the people who are going to vote Republican strictly for their wallets. And I think, can you not see what your party has become? Can you not see what's happening right now in the country? Because these are smart people. These are people who have all access to know what's going on. And they're choosing their wallets anyway. And I keep thinking, while you're protecting your tax bracket, you are leaving your freedoms unattended. And once your freedoms are taken away, you cannot just get those back. If you take away women's rights, we're the first people to come after. You know, it sounds like that old poem from Nazi Germany. You know, first they came for the, you know, first they came for the women and I wasn't a woman, so I didn't say anything, you know.
Of course.
But then they're coming for contraception and then they'll come for gay rights and then they'll come, like, it doesn't stop at abortion.
No, but,
and so
you know,
I wonder what these people are thinking.
There's two things I think about that. They're not thinking because they saw all this happen under Bush Cheney already. They saw trickle down collapse and fail them under Reagan Bush. They saw all of this fail under Bush and Cheney. Bush left office and said he thought he'd be the last Republican ever elected. I mean, we warned them about Bush for years. They hated us for warning them about Bush. Then Trump comes along and tells them everything we've been telling them about Bush. And now they believe it. It's a cult. But I think it's not just their pocketbook. For a generation, for all of my life, they've had the most sophisticated spiritual racket in history. The Republican Party has had a greater racket than organized religion has had. They have taken the Christians in America, the followers of Jesus, and they have been able to sucker the followers of Jesus into literally voting against everything Christ ever talked about by talking about abortion, which Christ never talked about. I'm all for government based on Christian values. Values of Jesus?
True
sure.
Christian values.
Death penalty.
Do
welcome
unto
a stranger.
Others. Treat your neighbor as yourself.
Take care of the sick. Be kind to those in prison. Take care of the poor. Yeah, that's good for an economy. For a generation, they've been able to get people to show up and vote just because of abortion. Now, it's done. Their number one fundraising tool, their number one get out the vote tool of Roe v. Wade is gone. Can they scare people enough about Mexicans by November? That's really the question, because as you had a great tweet, you said, here's the thing. This Republican Party has no interest in governing, no interest in policy, thought for the people, no thought for the people. They are about power and power alone. So anybody who cares about this country's future cannot, under any circumstances, allow them to have it. It seems, Lee, like they're really good at getting elected. They're not really good at keeping that power because they have no ideas.
Well, because they don't stand for anything. The thing is that you can scare people into voting for you, but you can't govern from there.
Yeah.
And they haven't governed for a really long time. And Matt Gaetz was just on TV yesterday saying the first thing they'll do, aside from making sure we pay more for prescription drugs, is impeach Biden and impeach Harris and take the entire 1-6 committee and call them before the, you know, get your papers ready. Like, it's absolutely unbelievable. And I think, can people not see like They have no interest. They have just no interest in governing, in the people, in what would be best for the people, in how we need to handle the country, in the coming climate catastrophe. You know, everything is, in many ways, the way the Republicans govern is reactionary and fear-based. The way the Democrats often run is reactionary. And the Democrats are actually quite good leaders. Once you give them power, if they have power, they get things accomplished. Look at what Biden's been able to accomplish in 2 years. It's astounding. Mm-hmm. One of my friends wrote me a text today and he said, I'm having this fight with this guy online. He was having an email with a friend of his and he's like, what has Biden actually done? And I was like, Ron. And he's like, could you just write it out for me? And I was like, sure. So I wrote this little thing out for him. And he was like, holy shit, he's done a lot, right? And I was like,
exactly.
Yes, dude, he's done a lot. And these are smart, educated people. You know, they kind of have an idea.
But they're not news nerds.
No, they're not. I mean, and unfortunately, we're not as good as selling our wins as they are at selling the fear. And we need to get better at that. We just need to get better at it.
Greatest growth of employment in 1 year in the history of the country. NATO's never been stronger. What? Let's go through a really top of my head. The CHIPS and Science Act, which is going to bring manufacturing back here, right? The PACT Act for the vets, the Inflation Reduction Act, the American Rescue Plan, first black woman on the Supreme Court. Incredible, once in a generation infrastructure investments. I mean, like, that's just off the top of my head. They've been doing it's like they're lesbian Scientologists. They're getting so much done in one day. I swear to God, I've never seen such a productive Congress in my life. They're doing it. But if your friend doesn't know, let's assume that other people who don't watch the news obsessively like us nerds don't know. So is Roe v. Wade outrage going to be enough? I mean, that's really
question. I think that's the linchpin, honestly. Yeah. I think it's hard to avoid that one. I think you're right. They have been running off this since Reagan, moral majority stuff. And they are like the dog that caught the car. This is their one big thing. This is the thing. We're going to overturn Roe. Okay, well, it's done. And not only is it done, you guys are kind of like psyched about it and quite cruel about it. And actually, women can just go die about it. And I find that it is so distasteful to people. So many people, and I'm talking about Republican women I know and people that are like, well, I've always voted Republican, but I don't know what they're doing with this Roe thing. And it is astounding the amount of people who have turned their backs on this party that I have spoken to. And these are people that I go back to that are voting with their wallets, who are just, it's the gleeful nature in which they are ripping rights away. It's not just that they're taking them. It's that they have bounties on women's head in Texas and they have neighbors spying on neighbors, you know, and they have this kind of behavior. It's way past, you know, we want to protect, you know, the unborn child. It is way past that. It's we want to punish women. Women should probably go to jail. Women should probably have the death sentence, this kind of thing. It's all extremism. And I think that's the thing about the party. It's become so extreme.
If you're just joining us, my guest is the great Lee McGowan, better known in the podcast world as Politics Girl. I really love the recent interview with Karen Bass. I'm wondering what have you learned about our system, about how media works in politics since you've begun doing all these interviews? You're very, very good at it and you do a really, really fun show. How has becoming a media figure impacted your view of the whole system?
Well, one of the things I wanted to do when I started having guests on the show, because when I started the podcast, I was doing essentially like TED Talks or college lectures, you know, on bigger concept ideas that I wanted people to understand. Why is our education, public education, such a mess? You know, what is actually going on with the media? Why has legacy media let us down so much? You know, the rise of authoritarianism around the world. I did an entire podcast episode where I thought it would be just sort of a simple, easy episode that would explain, you know, socialism and fascism and Marxism and all these words that people indiscriminately use wrong. And it turned out to be this giant episode because, you know, I was like, oh, well, you can't really explain socialism without explaining capitalism. And you can't really explain, you know, communism without explaining socialism. And you can't explain either of them without putting them in historical context. And so I ended up like back in ancient Greece and I went all the way to Russia invading Ukraine. And I thought, holy hell, what have I done to myself? And when I boiled it down into an episode, my husband, who I said is my producer, he was like, damn, I didn't know most of that. And I thought, I know, right? You think you know this stuff. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, that's when the Berlin Wall came in. And that's why we had, you know, and you think you know these things. And then when you learn them, it puts all the pieces together in your head. And so I started doing those. So when I actually started having guests on the show, I wanted to make sure I wasn't doing what everyone else was doing. And so one of the things I wanted to do was just have a conversation with people. So if I'm talking to a political person or I'm talking to a pundit or I'm talking to a politician, often they say things in a way that most people don't talk like. We don't
correct
talk like that. Correct. And so they would say something and I would say, okay, what do you mean when you say that? Or you say this, but like, in what way? And they're like, oh, you know, and then you see them backing up and try to explain it differently. Or they would say something and I'm like, and when you say that, you mean blah, 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 blah. And they're like, yeah, that's exactly what I mean. Because most of them have a wonky way of speaking that sort of loses people and checks people out. Yes. And I thought, if I'm going to have guests, I want people to really get something out of it. If they're going to spend an hour with me, you know, the death of actual journalism was 24-hour journalism. It was 24/7 news, you know, because then you're constantly trying to fill the time.
Yeah.
With,
well, ratings driven news in general. I mean, the golden age of niche news where we go for affirmation, not information, and where, you know, Trump is hate watching. Trump is ratings crack. It's all about the eyeballs. And if talking about Trump all day gets enough liberals to tune in because we hate him, then that's what the news is going to be. And that's what we have to get past. Yeah.
Yeah. We have to get past it. And so I'm lucky enough to do a show about things I actually care about for 1 hour a week, for the most part. And so if you're going to spend an hour with me, I want your time to be worthwhile. And so that's what I do with my conversations. And that, you just mentioned the conversation I had with Karen Bass. I happen to love Karen Bass. Also really feel very distrustful of this new way that Republicans are trying to get into the political sphere, which is to wrap themselves like wolf in sheep's clothing style as something they are not. And whether that's a Blake Masters scrubbing his website of all of his extremist abortion views and now acting like, oh, I'm just totally moderate on this. And you're like, no, you're not, Blake. You get in trouble. If you get into power, you're going to be the most extremist we could possibly have. So let's stop pretending we're something we're not. And the thing about this LA mayor's race is that there's two Democrats running, except they're not both Democrats, right? One is an actual Democrat who's worked her whole life in social services and in healthcare and in, you know, starting a community coalition and then in state government and now in national government. And the other person is a billionaire real estate developer who's been a Republican his whole life and became a Democrat 3 weeks before he ran for mayor because, you know, he's running in a Democratic city. And listen, maybe he had a giant change of heart and suddenly he's a liberal Democrat who believes in all of our values. That's wonderful. You have been a Democrat for less than a year. We're not going to give you Los Angeles, the second biggest city in the country, and the blue, one of the bluest cities to run. We just can't do that. Be a Democrat for maybe longer
Bloomberg
than a year.
Bloomberg his way in there. Yeah, exactly. He's trying to Bloomberg his way through.
Yeah. And so I just, I'm tired of that kind of stuff. So I had Karen on the show, but also I am a nerd, right? So I spent a lot of time on this woman's website. Yeah. And her website is incredible, John. Like,
I've seen it. Yeah, it's great.
Literally, it's like, it doesn't say we're going to fix homelessness. It says we're going to fix homelessness and here's how. And then it's literally just pages and pages of like, we're going to have this and we're going to do this. And there's all these weird rules that we don't need to have. And so talking to her, that's what we talked about. She was like, oh, Lee, there are so many stupid rules that no one has gotten rid of. You know, like you go in to do something and you're like, what do you mean I can't do this? She made this great example of how we have so many people on the street now who have mental health crises. And that's because we closed all the places where mental health patients could go. So what we did was we basically made an open air asylum on the street. And the only choice we had was to arrest them and put them in prison.
That's right.
And so we have enough money for people to be in prison all the time, but we don't have enough money to put people somewhere where they could be helped. So she said, okay, so I wanted to talk about how we could make places where people who are having mental problems rather than criminal problems could go. But there's a law on the books where you can't put people who are having mental crises, more than 19 of them, in one building. So the woman that was in charge of it had to build three separate buildings on a plot of land they had, which was astronomically more expensive and very stupid and very inefficient. And so Karen's like, I'm looking at this law and I was like, why is this still on the books? This is from 50 years ago. Like, why are we doing this? And this is what a lifelong, not politician, but public servant can do for a city like Los Angeles.
That's
gotten
true.
So mired in its own shenanigans over the years that we're actually completely inefficient. And she's in there actually making plans to not only fix the problems, but do it differently, treat the root cause instead of just brushing it all under the carpet. And I have to say, if you're a billionaire real estate developer, what's going to happen if you're going to get rid of homelessness? You're going to build. So you're going to give your own contracts to your own people, and you're going to make money doing that. Like, no one spends $60 million of their own money and doesn't want a return for their investment. Exactly. No one does that. And so you have all of these celebrities coming on being like, he's the best. You should vote for Rick, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, first of all, you don't live in Los Angeles. You live in Calabasas or wherever you live. And secondly, you can't even vote in this election. Secondly, he's going to do that thing where we brush everything under the carpet and say, all fixed. Yeah. No, it's not fixed.
The kind of
it's
Democrat we don't need of more my, of.
Yeah, out of my eye line. We don't need that. We need people that are like, here's the root cause. We're going to dig up the root of this weed and we're going to build something new, something that makes more sense, something that we don't end up back in this problem again. And Karen's that kind of person. And I called the episode The Good Karen because
I saw,
obviously we've had a lot of bad Karens, and particularly Karens that look like me, and we need to do better. So she is the real deal. And I'm so proud of her. She's just the kind of leader we need.
No, I agree with you.
And I'd
love to see her get more of a national platform. And for anybody who wants to know why progressives are excited in L.A. County, do yourself a favor. Listen to the Politics Girl podcast, the most recent episode. Lee, it's such a joy to have you. Before I let you go, I would be remiss if I didn't just ask you, what do you think happened to a certain senator who decided it would be a good idea to speak at the McConnell Institute this week? I've interviewed Kyrsten Sinema back when she was anti-war and a liberal years ago. Is it just money? Do you have any theories on that particular personal corruption? What could have done it?
Yeah, look, I mean, what a disappointment, right? It goes back to my wolf in sheep's clothing thing. There's nothing worse than someone who presents themselves as one thing and then turns out to completely betray what they were and act in another way. And it doesn't matter if it's you and your friend from elementary school that you're still heartbroken over that they turned their back on you, or it's a senator like Kyrsten Sinema who has the power to protect our voting rights and protect our human rights and turns her back on us to do that. Especially when she was elected to be the complete opposite of that. I mean, look, she's at the McConnell Institute. She's sucking up. She's doing her thing. She wore something appropriate, which I think tells you that she knows exactly what she's doing when she wears so many inappropriate things. And she knows where her bread is buttered. She's speaking to her real voters and she's speaking to her donors. And she's not running away from them. She's not hiding in the bathroom there. She knows what she's doing. And I think the thing is that we have to be so careful because the Senate, you know, if Kyrsten Sinema leaves and becomes a Republican right now, the way it is, Mitch McConnell would have the gavel, right? If we upset Joe Manchin too much and he leaves and goes and sits with the Republicans, that's it. We lose the gavel.
Mitch
McConnell's
in charge.
He gets to decide what comes to the floor. You know, so people are like, just make him be a Republican. He'll just be a Republican. You're like, no, we don't want him to be a Republican. No, we do not want that. But what we do want is an actual majority, two more seats, four more seats, you know, six more seats. Like, that is a possibility for Democrats, especially with this slate of people that they are running for the Senate right now, the Herschel Walkers and the Blake Masters. We could take a lot of these seats. And even if we had two votes that negated Manchin and Sinema's vote, all of a sudden we'd be in a position where we could suspend or get rid of the filibuster. And if we do that, then all of a sudden the Democrats could start passing legislation that people actually want. And we would start to see what it looks like if government works for the people, if things actually get accomplished. We would start to see what government looks like the way the 1-6 committee does, where you go, geez, this is a very efficient committee. Usually these people are screaming at each other for 5 minutes at a time. And you go, no, this is what government's supposed to be like. It's supposed to be staid. It's supposed to be organized. It's supposed to be responsible. And if we can flip the Senate enough that we can expand it, eliminate and or suspend the filibuster, we could pass voting rights, we could codify Roe, we could codify gay rights, we could do all these things. And then suddenly people would start to say, back to your point before, they would start to look at Republicans and say, hey man, what do you have to offer us? Because these guys are giving us a lot.
Lee McGowan is the host of the Politics Girl podcast. You can follow her on the socials at I Am Politics Girl. Such a pleasure. Longtime fan, first time suck up. Please come back and see us again anytime.
I would love to. Thank you, John.
Thank you so much. Quick break. When we come back, Keith Price joins us. We take your calls all the way till midnight on the East, 9 p.m. on the Pacific, 866-997-4748.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
I'm John Fugelsang. We are at 866-997-4748. People of Earth, whether you like it or not, would you please put one hand and one hand together to make as loud a sound as you can? If you're driving, go right ahead. Put down the phone and stop texting to applaud for a comedian, an actor, a broadcaster extraordinaire, the first openly gay black radio host at SiriusXM, the first openly gay and black. He wasn't the first openly black radio host. And he co-anchored the morning show on the late lamented Breakthrough Channel, OutQ. Be sure to catch his wonderful Broadway podcast, Keith Price's Curtain Call. People of Earth, I give you Keith Price.
Hello.
Good to see you, sir. I'm great, thank you. How have you been?
I'm good, you know, busy trying to like stay alive and be in the mix, you know, do a little this, a little that. It's been good though. I've had a nice kind of interesting time. Just getting out and performing last week and the week before was kind of nice.
You had a show at the Duplex. I saw some video. How did it go?
It was fun. It was really fun. Just getting up on stage and telling the story. Like, it's just been so cathartic. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, it's like, you know, there's a lot of really horrible shit happening in the world. But at the same time, the things that you're enduring are just as horrible shit, big picture wise. And you just, it's nice to be able to just, and then this is what made me laugh about the whole thing. You know, it's like, so yeah. That's where I've been in the last couple of weeks. So it's been nice to deal with that. And, you know, my side hustle with my ushering has been kind of fun.
Oh, that's good. I mean, it's been a stressful time, Keith. It's been a stressful time for everyone. And I know that for you as well. And we're looking at a time when they're trying to have a nationwide ban on abortion rights after gutting Roe v. Wade. When we're still losing 400 Americans a day to COVID. This devastating hurricane is going to cause billions of dollars in Florida and destroy many, many homes. Many people are without power. Puerto Rico, 11 million folks lost all power last night. It gets to a point sometimes, Keith, where it gets so scary, I just have to lie around the house and wait for Maggie Haberman to finally reveal evil shit Trump did years later after it could have made a difference. That's my new hobby. When Maggie Haberman shows up and, you know, her book is coming out. Spoiler alert, not to brag. It's called Confidence Man, The Making of Donald Trump and the Breaking of America. And I just wanted to run a couple things by you and see how you rate them, because a lot of it's really fun. One, he was often very vulgar about world leaders. He called German Prime Minister Angela Merkel that bitch.
I'm sure she said the same thing about him.
I'm sure. Okay. Well, no, actually, that's what Putin calls him, actually. When Ruth Bader Ginsburg was dying, Trump would sarcastically raise his hands to the sky in prayer and say, please, God, please watch over her. Every life is precious. Then he would say, how much longer do you think she has? But one of my most favorite things is I can't tell if it's the anti-trans stuff or the racist stuff that I like more. He was telling Maggie in one of the interviews he gave her for the book, he sat down with her three times. And again, I believe Donald Trump has leaked to Maggie Haberman his entire presidency. But he was talking about his perspective of race is frozen in time, going back to New York City in the 80s. Because he talks about how he dated Carrie Young, who's a biracial model in the 90s. And he said he met her parents, so he's so not racist. And he actually told Maggie that he told this woman, you know, he's like, I'm so not racist. I dated a half black model in the 90s
because I couldn't commit to the whole thing.
Well, it's sort of like he can cheat on two different women at the same time, don't you think? But he actually said, and this is in the book, that he told her that her looks, her good looks, came from her black mom and her brains came from the white side. So that's one thing. But I think and then we found out that when he was first inaugurated, you know, he was having this reception with all these people in Congress, and there was hors d'oeuvres on the menu. And when he noticed that the Democratic staffers had a lot of African-American people on staff because they're Democrats, he thought that they were waiters. And he said, why don't they get the food? And he said this to Schumer and Pelosi staffers. But the best part was they were having a debate in 2016, him and Hillary Clinton and Reince Priebus. Remember Reince Priebus? Remember that?
Yes,
remember?
That little
every man over 50 should get his Reince Priebus checked. Reince Priebus was debating with him. And he said, let me ask you this same-sex bathroom question. And Priebus said, hey, look, I'm a female transgender student. Can I still use the girls' bathroom? And without missing a beat, Trump said in front of everybody, cocked or decocked? And the entire group helping him in the debate was slack-jawed in horror.
Wow.
So I'm a big fan of hearing that Donald Trump is an uncouth, racist, bigoted idiot. But, like, I'm sorry. This is just titillating. It's there for the clicks. If Maggie Haberman really cared, shouldn't this should have come out when it could have made a difference?
Wow. Wow.
Isn't that great? Yeah.
That is the so crassest much. Thing I think I've ever heard in my entire life.
Which and, one? Know, the biracial model or the black staffers or the trans girl? I mean, like, holy shit.
Talk about a comedy rule of threes, man. Did that just go haywire? What? I mean.
And the wife rule of threes, too.
It's like, why are they not serving the food? I don't understand. There's a lot of black people just standing around. What is going on here?
That made news all day today. That made news all day.
I just, to me, it's sort of like, so do you think he might still be a racist? are we still having that debate? You know how we still are trying to figure out, you know, how much he actually knows about this whole January 6th thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, what are the chances that he just happens to be that racist? What's the chance?
I guess my question, Mr. Price, is would it make a difference to his base? Like, is there anyone that voted for Trump before?
36% ain't going nowhere, baby.
There's no one who voted for him that would be turned off by this. I mean,
no. for some, this is probably accentuating their thought process. You know what
God
I mean?
Damn, like, God damn, I think I like him more now. I think I like him more now. Yeah.
Because he's right there with me with this.
Oh, good times.
It's laughable because it's sad to think that there are actual human beings that are walking on the planet, you know, living in that thought process. It's just,
I agree.
It's maddening to me. But, like, you have to laugh at the shock and awe of the world over it. And it's like, really? Are you surprised? You're surprised that this has come out of his mouth. I mean, that cock decock thing,
decocked. There's no reason to believe that's not completely true. And I bet he still thinks it's hilarious.
Wow. I'm just like,
yeah,
you know, but then again, you know, it goes ahead and proves what we already know about him. So to me, this is gratuitously. This is more tittering for the water cooler for those of us who would talk about this kind of shit again. Because you know, you and I are going to be kikiing about this shit for a hot minute. Come on. Why are all these black people standing around? Aren't they the waiters?
I'm just ready for there to be.
Excuse me, sir. I have several degrees and I speak 65 different languages. Go fuck yourself.
What's the best way for our evil army of the night to follow you?
At Comedy Daddy on the Twitter and KeithPriceComic.com.
So good to see you, sir. Thank you so much
you
for
too,
joining
my
us.
My man.
Thanks to Lee McGowan, politics girl. Chris, are you smitten? I'm smitten. She was great.
Yes,
Bob Seska, are you smitten? She was great. Yes. Tomorrow night, Rabbi Daniel Ruttenberg, Corey Bretschneider. Friday night, Michael Cohen. The guy who's been crashing on my couch ever since. Keep it to the SiriusXM Progress. We will see you tomorrow here on The Love Fest. Peace.